Alex, in a way, these two have been slightly at variance with Brian.
Yeah.
You know, how do you feel about it as an American in our fair city?
As an American, I think, you know, first principle as an American is I would want the press to be an effective check on power. No, I would very much like the press to be effectively be able to dissect Donald Trump's policies, to cast light on them, to improve them, right? I mean, I think that's what, you know, I support Donald Trump, and I'm ultimately kind of an anti-establishment, brick-through-the-window, Brexit-supporting kind of guy who distrusts authority and likes journalism and its traditional role as a check on that. I am concerned that it is perhaps, as Trump pokes the beast and you know, creates this feedback loop of silly statements, you know, provocative response. My concern is that Trump's administration, Trump himself, is a bit of a master at manipulating the news media, and he's kind of getting the result he wants at the expense of the news media's credibility. So that's just a segue into, you know, just a few things to talk about on the credibility of the news media. So it was actually a great set of Gallup polls came out in September, sort of, you know, how do Americans feel about the mainstream media in particular? What percentage trust it a lot? What percentage trust it a little? What percentage don't trust it much at all? It was a lot, fair amount, not very much, and not at all. So the percentage of Americans generally trusting the news media, either a fair amount or more than that, had dropped, you know, had fallen from like 55%+ in the 70s to like 30% today. So across all groups and walks of life, Americans trust the mainstream media less than they used to. But what was a really, really shocking change in the polling numbers is if you look at Republicans in particular, between 2015 and 2016, the percentage of Republicans who trusted the mainstream media dropped from 32% to 14%. It was a dramatic erosion in how they viewed the mainstream media. And this is presumably is what happened, is Trump and the coverage of that. And I would say that, you know, far from neglecting to be sufficiently strident, I think the Trump opposition has kind of become too strident, maybe become too blinded by just dislike of Donald Trump, blinded perhaps by a disconnect from people that voted for him. They don't understand. And I think if you read the New York Times, this comes through a bit. You know, there's certainly all the editorials, and I think it leaks over into the news side as well. The sense of, you know, I have no idea why anyone could support this man, and they must, if they did that, they must be profoundly uninformed, which is kind of the implication of Brian's remarks, or we just need to sort of take truth to them as evangelists in the press, or they're just, you know, just really bad people that have just evil ends. So those are kind of the two possibilities, and I think, you know, I think it would be better for the media, certainly, if they had more people on their staff that voted for Trump, or at least a broader understanding of why people might bring that to it. I think that's you know, you see this bias, I guess, or I see this bias, and you can disagree with whether it exists or not, but you see certainly, I would say, very strident anti-Trump, you know, statements articulated by the media. And what's the effect of this, I guess, right? I mean, I think the danger for the media is that it starts to lose its grip on accuracy. And this is the, you know, you can say that call it fake news or just call it inaccurate stories or whatever. But since, you know, even since the inauguration, you know, this you know, one story that came up was this, the idea that Trump's Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin had foreclosed on this woman's home because she was 27 cents light on a payment. Not true. It wasn't his bank. She didn't foreclose on her home. It was completely wrong. It was then picked up and sort of, it made it to Politico. It meandered its way as incorrect story throughout the press. Now, obviously, like, that happens, but and the question is a sort of really ardent dislike of the Trump administration going to allow it to happen more? Is the sort of the BuzzFeed dossier, or not just BuzzFeed, but this really sort of big journalistic push to tar Trump with ties to Russia, which has been somewhat effective. I mean, there's a YouGov poll saying that 52% of Democratic voters believe that Russia actually tampered with voting totals. So they didn't hack the election by virtue of hacking John Podesta, but they actually believe that, you know, they skewed the vote, that they hacked the machines, which is just, I think, completely impossible. But, you know, the people believe that. So I think there is a sense in which if you respond to Trump with, you know, really strident slanted stories or stories that are inaccurate or stories that are that have a particular agenda, you two things happen, right? One is that you convince your supporters get convinced of them, and the other is that these Republicans that have gone 32% to 14% and they just don't tune in, or like me, they tune in. I read the New York Times, I read Breitbart, I try to split the differences in terms of my morning news consumption. But you don't, you know, you kind of you then as, if this continues to happen. And if Trump is able to provoke the New York Times into, you know, calling him 10 different variants of Hitler, and it moves out of the book reviews where they've kind of made some allusions, and they can, you know, at some point, if you continue down your current path, you're going to have, like, more and more sort of open, strident opposition. And if people think that's the appropriate way to go, you know, I think you render yourself irrelevant with that. I think, you know, my model, I guess, is we ask, how should you cover, as a journalist, how should you cover President Trump? I would kind of say the best way to do it is how you cover the Obama administration. And I mean that in the sense that it's really better if you kind of established your journalistic bona fides being critical of the Obama administration, because it certainly had its massive overreaches of power, if we recall the NSA. And one journalist I think actually, you know, the journalist I trust the most right now is Glenn Greenwald, because he is, like, I think, a very principled guy, and that he's really against overreach of government power. He was very, very harsh, a very, very harsh critic of the Obama administration when they did it. He's a very harsh critic of Trump, and he's a very harsh critic of the sort of current, you know, CIA attempt or whoever's responsible for it to tar Trump with Russia ties, because he thinks it's unproductive. He thinks those are a violation of his principles. I mean, that's what I would say is, like, you know, it's maybe journalism with an ideological lens, but he strives to be accurate, he makes good arguments, he's balanced. I think that, you know, the more you have of that, you know, the better you're going to be at, you know, at opposing Trump or doing anything else.
It's funny, a lot of people said 2016 was an absolutely terrible year. I mean, apart from David Bowie, you know, there was the Brexit.
And
Rickman, of course, yeah. There was the EU thing, and then there was Trump. But, of course, it was a kind of a winning year for conservatives. I mean, like yourself, you know, this was actually a year of great democratic miracles. I just wondered whether you felt there was anything that resonated in terms of the response here in the media to Brexit, compared to the response to Trump. Obviously, a lot of our papers were Eurosceptical, but that sense of being out of touch that you mentioned, you know.
Yeah, I would think of it, you know, because I'm not, I mean, I have my Republican Party cufflinks on because my wife, you know, gave me, but I'm not like super traditional Republican guy. And I think as we think about the sort of left versus right axis here, I think there's two other really important axes we're maybe missing in that, right? The one is sort of city folk versus country folk, if you will, or like people who have this really awesome life in London. And I think we can all, you know, I think everyone in this room is like on this, the global economy works for you, right? You know, you bounce around from fancy city to fancy city, you get to ponder deep thoughts, and like, you know, it's great, I love it. You know, I'm of this tribe, but I recognize that, like, I'm from Tennessee in the United States, and I go home and I see this sort of economic devastation wrought upon them. It's like this is just, and this is the same thing that happened with Brexit, right? People in London's just like doing gangbusters, if you don't mind the pollution. It's just like it's growing like China, it's polluted like Beijing, and it's just like tremendously wealthy. But you venture outside of it, like, this is not a left versus right thing. And in fact, you know, Trump's seizing on the mantle of traditional leftist positions like Bernie Sanders. Like, the idea that, you know, immigration is a problem because it erodes wages is a very traditional leftist idea that you had sort of throughout. So I think that the axes of sort of establishment versus anti-establishment and, you know, a wealthy versus less wealthy are really relevant here. The New York Times is not, a lot of the New York Times' opposition to and derision for Donald Trump, it also exhibited towards Bernie Sanders, I would say, and that's kind of its Wall Street establishment bias. It's not that it's not dyed-in-the-wool communism, so I think those are just different political axes.
So the one thing they have in common is that the media is somewhat in its own bubble.
Yeah.